Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Right, mate, we are on episode 11.
So that's 11 already. Disclaimer, this is not fruity cider, this is just blackcurrant. I'm not drinking on a Sunday evening.
Yeah, you've been asleep all day.
How's your week been? I have for most of the day, yeah. How's your week been?
Yeah, it's been nice, mate, it's been nice. The sunshine kind of came back yesterday, which was good. I had a couple of friends over today and had a few burgers and stuff. Social distance in the garden, which is nice. I've got a nice sized garden, yeah. So it's quite nice.
You have.
What about you? How's your week been?
Yeah, it's been good. Yeah, it's been good. I had a bit of work to do. I had tape an audition, which was nice to get back to a bit of normality.
Lovely.
Pardon?
I was saying lovely, man. I was going to say I've got a voice job tomorrow and an audition this week as well. So it's getting there. We're getting back to normality, isn't it?
Yeah, it's slowly getting back to a bit of normality, isn't it? The people who I've been speaking to are obviously in the same industry as us. You know, it's nice to hear that the auditions are coming back in and people are making plans to go back to work. So,
and it's kind of nice. Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, it's nice to think of the possibility of a bit of normality on the way. So, Charlotte's back at work now, so it's kind of, you know, we enjoyed the time off, but it's kind of nice now that we're going back to work.
And I quite like, because everyone's obviously going on about the new normal. I quite like the new normal of not having to get on a train to London for 2 hours, and I can just do an audition upstairs in my pants if need be.
I don't mind it. Not one person's come up to me in the street for like 11 weeks. It's been amazing. I know what you're saying. It's kind of the new normal, and I like the distancing that you've got to keep in the shops, and yeah, it's good.
I'd keep that. If you don't know me, stay away.
Yeah. The only thing that I'm really missing is obviously friends and family. So
yeah.
Other than that, it's kind of it's nice that we can see each other a bit more and whatnot. So yeah, it's all good. But so we're back. Episode 11 now.
Yeah, 11, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got creator of Trainspotting.
Well, he was the writer of the novel that then film was made. He wrote others, hadn't he? Filth. He wrote a lot, hadn't he?
Yeah, he's wrote loads. More recently, he wrote a film called Creation Stories that I was lucky enough to be part of with Michael Socker, who obviously we all know from This Is England. So we had to pop some wigs on for a couple of weeks in London, which was nice. It's all about Alan McGee, who is most famous for finding Oasis.
And being on our podcast 2 weeks ago.
So, yeah, it's a bit of a treat for us, really. And I think with the genre of the film, it's kind of got a similar following to This Is England, would you say? It's kind of in that same category of, like...
Trainspotting.
Sort of... Yeah. In terms of, like... cult classics. I think This Is England's, we were in that genre now, aren't we? It's been going for a long time, which is amazing.
Trainspotting is one of them proper cult classics. I always remember it more though, because I had only seen Trainspotting when we were filming This Is England 86. It's the first time I'd seen
it.
So it was like 20. So, you know, not that bad. Wow, I mean, you're supposed to see it 80. Was you? See,
yeah, I only... must have been. Yeah, I must have been. Oh God, maybe 14.
Ah, wow.
I was really young when I saw it. Yeah,
I only remember the name sort of Trainspotting that. Do you remember the old video piracy advert? It was if you used to obviously like VHS tapes back in the day, and it'd come on and it'd be like, you wouldn't steal a car, you wouldn't steal a purse, so don't steal a film. And then it'd be like, it was like a marketplace, and it was like someone trying to return a dodgy pirate videotape. And the guy's like, oh, yeah, mate, like, it don't work. It's got this, it's got that. And he's going to go, what is it, Trainspotting? Next, you're going to tell me there's no trains in it. And it was just
no,
like...
I can't remember that.
You don't remember it? Like, that's how I remember Trainspotting by, like, because genuinely, I did think then it was about people who, you know...
Who spot trains.
Yeah.
I always just sticks out to me the scene with Ewan McGregor going down the toilet.
Mm.
I think, and it's the first sort of performance that I remember as a kid thinking from Robert Carlyle, thinking, yeah, Jesus, he's scary.
He's brilliant. Robert Carlyle.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, obviously, I thought he was brilliant in Full Monty as well, but just so menacing in that. I remember I met him in Edinburgh. My dad was in a lift with him, and tiny. He's only really small.
Yeah.
But, that performance, it's Begbie, wasn't it, he played Begbie.
Yeah, I can't remember. I've seen it like once or twice and a few years back now, but
I just remember that performance. Film. That is one of the first ones I looked at and was like, wow, that's great.
It discovered Ewan McGregor, right, that one, that film, it kind of made...
Yeah, it must have done, yeah, because it was really early on in his career, yeah.
Yeah, and then obviously he went on to Star Wars and all that stuff he's done. And,
yeah.
You know, great actor as well, Ewan McGregor, got a lot of time for old Obi-Wan, or young Obi-Wan, should I say. You don't have a clue what I'm on about. You don't have a clue what I'm on
Not
about.
Clue. French to me, I'm afraid.
Et posez vous de baisse au fond de Horabetis et Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Well, there you go, yeah.
There we are.
That's what it's like when everyone here will talk about Star Trek and Star Wars.
Irvine's subject was something that we kind of were on polar, not our views on it, just our interest in it. We're on complete opposite ends of the spectrum, aren't we? Politics. Voting. So, i.e. politics. Yeah. I'm quite interested in it.
When he texted me saying his subject, I was like, Andy's going to love this. Andy's going to love this. Because, you follow it a lot, don't you? You're quite... vocal when it comes to the voting and politics and things like that. It's that you've sort of always been into, really, for as long as I can remember. I'm not as interested in it. But it was a week where we literally just sat and listened. I think it was one of them very rare occasions where we don't shut up, where we sit and listen. Yeah, it was a good episode. I really enjoyed it. And his views as well. Like, I think he'd make a great prime minister.
If he won the lottery. What lottery? Let's find out. Should we crack on with it? And then we'll kind of do, as always, we'll do the debrief afterwards, after we spoke to Irvine. And we'll tell you who next week's guest is.
Yeah.
All right, see you after, Irvine Welsh.
Enjoy.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ready to go. I'll just be.
You just be you.
Just be doing my usual kind of sort of freestyle kind of nonsense bullshit like. But talking about things that were overrated. I think it's very important that we have the right to vote. It's obviously a massive kind of sort of democratic right, and I would never advocate losing that. And I kind of thought, well, I did this tweet years ago, which kind of became my kind
one of your many tweet. Amazing tweets, I must say.
This became the one that I pinned because it was like kind of it said that vote for a better life for yourself if you're doing all right. If you're not, if you're doing all right, vote for a better life for other people. If you're not doing all right, vote for a better life than you for yourself. You know, and I think what's happened in kind of democracies is that we've gotten to that stage where now we put voting on this kind of pedestal because voting rights have been so hard won down the years from the 1832 Reform Act, and then 1867, and then after the war they extended further. It feels like it's been a hard won thing. So we're very defensive about voting, and we kind of don't often think about the bigger picture of voting. Voting is just a mechanism for democracy, and voting is just a small part of democracy. You know, the whole idea about democracy is like kind of the demos, the Greek kind of idea of discussion and debate, and to me, it's like voting. We need to have in order to get the best out of voting, we need to have a kind of educated and committed populist and a kind of real kind of democratic discussion. And without these things, I don't think we have these anymore. And I don't think we ever did, but I think we were working towards them, and now we're kind of walking away from them. So I think all we're left with is this mechanism that we kind of put on a pedestal. So I think it's important. Well, I think it's important to vote. It's important to vote. Most of all, it's important to vote for something that you really believe in. Because if you vote for something you don't believe in, then you're not. All you're doing is endorsing a system that you of government, of hierarchy, of power that you don't necessarily believe in. You're endorsing something you don't believe in. So you should be able to vote for something that you really believe in, and that's the important essence of it. Now, if you can't vote for something that you don't believe in, I can't even think of the last time I voted, because I just couldn't bring myself to vote for any of the parties that didn't kind of sort of represent me. And that's me being this kind of picky, kind of pernickety, artsy guy who's always on the outside anyway, who's always kind of fucking outside the tent pissing in instead of sort of taking part in it. You know, well, any kind of government, I would be the same. I'd be a kind of dissident under any kind of regime that you care to mention. Like, you know, I think it's important that you have people like that, like me, but not too many of them. Otherwise, it's an unworkable kind of society. But it needs some people that are kind of just natural kind of critics, basically. To me, it was like, if you look at rights, intrinsic rights, I think that the right to vote and the right not to vote are the same thing. You know, so you can't have one without the other. Yeah. So what I object to is not voting so much as a kind of the guilt tripping that you're somehow irresponsible if you don't vote, if you choose not to vote, because there's nothing that's representing you. And some people will say, you know, well, you vote for the lesser of the evils, and yeah. I can understand that argument fully, but I think you've got to also, all that is negative voting. You're voting to stop somebody, to stop a worse set of bastards getting in than the ones that kind of, you know, the other ones, basically. But I think it's like now, I think we're at a unique point in history where we have a kind of declining and sort of dissolving capitalism, and we're in a major change into a whole new set of relationships, into a whole new kind of whole new modes of production, whole new modes of technology. So I think it's an opportunity for us to examine our kind of relationship with democracy and what it actually means. Yeah. And what I would be doing, what I would advocate doing, would be abolishing voting and replacing it with a lottery. So what I would suggest would happen is that you've got like 620 members of parliament. Instead of electing these members of parliament, you would have something like a national lottery, and you'd have everybody's name in this lottery, everybody from the voting, the participant age. And I would, you know, personally, I would kind of, I would make people, I would not have anybody over 60. I would, you know, they would not have the right to take part as far as I'm concerned. And I'd lower it to 14, anybody 14 upwards would be able to take part.
Yeah.
And the 620 names picked out of that lottery would be the 620 MPs, and they would decide and debate in the House of Commons and all the legislation. The only stipulation, you know, it's like I wouldn't have any, you know, it's like you would have a cross section of the population that emerge. You would have 50% men, 50% women. You might have some more one and some more another if it's the random draw and all that. But you'd roughly come out statistically, it would roughly come out the same. The age would roughly come out the same. You might have it skewed one way or the other and all that, but and then out of these 600, you would have the cabinet ministers, about 40 people. I would have another draw in this, and then I would have 40 names picked out. They would be the cabinet, and from that cabinet, one name would be picked out, and another lottery to be the prime minister and the kind of head of that cabinet. Now, what that would mean as a society, it would be incumbent that everybody would have to be educated in science, technology, the arts, kind of economics. So it would be important that that everybody got educated, and the whole society would have to take responsibility for that education. If people didn't want to become, if people's name was drawn out and they didn't want to become, they didn't want to serve in parliament, they would have to serve the country in some other way, some kind of national service, not necessarily military, but perhaps medical. Because obviously medical now is going to be the new military. You know, spending has to be on medical rather than military stuff, because all our kind of future issues are going to be health issues. I mean, it's like the virus is basically just taking out the whole American kind of defense, kind of the whole sort of defense budget thing. There's no reason to have it now. It's like kind of it's gone. It's all going to be kind of viral warfare and laboratories and all that from now on in. So everything has to be spent on health now. So you kind of, you would have a system whereby people would be expecting that they might be having to participate in society. So they'd have much more of a vested interest in educating themselves and learning about it. And also, instantly, you've got no elites. You've got no the power of elites, the power of money, the power of lobbies and outside influences. It's all gone, because you have a kind of representative parliament of the country as a whole. So that's what I would replace voting with, and that's why I think that that, you know, that voting is a kind of, and this is a new, this goes right back to the old city states, the old democratic city states used to do that, albeit in a kind of limited way, you know, but the old Italian city states in the era of Machiavelli, kind of Rome, Florence and all this, they had these kind of, they had this kind of thing going on. And I think it has to be extended to kind of modern democracy, basically. So I think we kind of have to think more about democracy and less about voting as an actual mechanism of democracy, and think more about, you know, how we improve the mechanisms of democracy, how we kind of move into this this kind of post-capitalist world with democratic options increased. Mm-hmm. So basically, that's my kind of spiel and kind of rant.
That was, yeah. But it's, I think the thing is nowadays as well, particularly with voting, is you never really know who you can trust nowadays, I suppose. Can you really? I mean, yeah. I'm the same as you. I was working during the last vote, and I didn't have, I was away. I was in Manchester, so I wasn't at home, so I couldn't go into my local constituency.
Yeah.
So I couldn't go into my local one, so I didn't get a chance to vote. And I was sometimes made to feel bad at work because I couldn't vote. People were saying to me, "What, you haven't voted?" It was like,
probably
I hadn't a chance to do. Did you? I'm assuming you voted, and.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think I was probably one of them people who was kind of messaging you like, "Just go and vote." you might know more, Irvine, on this. Like, I've always been under the assumption that those who don't vote, and I completely get that. Like, I get that, you know, sometimes there isn't a party for you. And I'm kind of there now with, I'm predominantly a Labour voter. But I feel now that the party isn't really for me now again. Because it's kind of gone back to this centrist party that it was in the 90s. Is it not right that those non-votes then prop up the party with the most votes?
I think there's been kind of two views to non-voters. Like, there's been the kind of the positive abstentions and the negative abstentions, and the positive abstentions are seen as, like, it's quite a kind of class bias thing. The positive abstentions are seen as the kind of the intellectual chin strokers and all that think, I'm not really happy with these parties, so I'm going to kind of not take part in it. And the negative abstentions have been these kind of people that have seemed to be too lazy, or I can't be bothered, I'm just going for a packet of fags, or maybe kind of, you know, or kind of, I'll go on the way to the pub. And, you know. And I don't think there is such a thing, such a divide. I think that people are engaged to the extent that the system is kind of helping them in some ways, or is hindering them. If it's not helping them, then they're not really that engaged with it. And they shouldn't be that engaged with it, really. You know, and I think we've been emotionally blackmailed. There's a whole kind of industry into saying we have to vote, and we have to vote. But, you know, and that's why, I mean, I would make it compulsory that people register to vote. You know, everybody should register to vote. I mean, there's people in America who are being denied the right to vote now because of the colour of their skin. It's absolutely obscene. You know, it's like kind of, it's actually worse than it was in the 50s in segregation. So people should have the right to vote, and it should be made as easy as possible for them to do so. But, so if we made voting easier, if we made it easier for people to vote, we make it more difficult for people not to vote. So yeah. we give them that kind of engagement and that kind of choice, but they're still, you know, they're bigger participants in the society. But, I still feel that as a mechanism, voting has had its day, because when you think about it, every time you've had a kind of, from the 1832 Reform Act onwards, it's like the wealthy, the ruling classes, the elites have always found a way to maintain their power in a democracy. And it's like, you know, it's usually been money, or it's been wealth, it's been kind of paying wages and controlling people that way, or it's been the lobby system, and it's kind of been kind of by the use of big capital, or now it's kind of by the use of a one-sided, one-dimensional media and kind of constant brainwashing, the constant same kind of message that this is kind of these kind of eating toffs kind of somehow represent you, and they're kind of doing the best for you that they can and all that, and anything else is somehow kind of an aberration to your and threat to your way of life and all that. So I think that's been very persuasive. But and I think that any kind of every sort of extension of voting as a mechanism is being subverted from is kind of democratic realization by that kind of power, by that sort of ongoing power, the lobby system, the wealth, and kind of the news media. So what I think that, you know, one of the reasons that I'm an advocate of the lottery thing is because it's simple, it's fair, and most of all, it's arbitrary. You know, you don't have a kind of political class of being trained to take positions of power, whether it's an old Etonian ruling class of the Conservative Party, or whether it's a kind of a lawyer, journalist, professional kind of middle liberal middle class of the Labour Party. You know, you're as likely to have somebody who's on the dole or who's shoveling shit as you are to have a kind of a baronet or, you know, and because of that, it's incumbent on the society to educate everybody in civics and in kind of sciences and in all the issues that we're going to kind of face and to focus on the real issues. I mean, you've got a fucking idiot who can parrot fashion recite a bit of Latin, you know, what fucking use is that to anybody? You know, so if you have somebody that knows a bit about science, that knows a bit about climate change, that knows a bit about economics, and knows about kind of the issues that we're all going to face in the world, then we've got a much kind of stronger kind of we've got a much stronger, much more rounded, much more a bigger, a broader, more intelligent fucking gene pool of kind of political intellect and will, and we've got a much more bigger sense of ownership of that. So that would be kind of what I would advocate.
Yeah, because I agree with you there, because I think at the moment, like you say, you've either got that Etonian class, or you have, like you say, got that kind of middle class sort of Labour sort of thing going on. But that, you know, I think what people kind of think at the moment is you need that educated, you know, Etonian kind of leader, because they're going to be the smart ones. They're going to be the ones with all the answers. And even when you were kind of saying that, and you were saying, you know, it could be anyone.
Again, it's propaganda. When you think of somebody, you know, the reality of it is the last kind of Etonian guy just completely fucked the country with Brexit, which a Conservative Party debate that was posted on everybody else, and it's kind of unleashed all this nationalism. And the you know, the other guy who we have now was boasting about not washing his hands and then fucking ended up in intensive care. Fucking that's idiot. So, I mean, you can't, you know, to actually, and even the kind of, you know, the kind of Etonian type kind of sort of ruling class education, it's not based on any modern version of statecraft. It's based on an imperial, run an imperialist kind of society. For an imperial elite, but that kind of imperialist society doesn't fucking exist anymore. It's disintegrating. And again, because people are in this existential fear of this great change that's coming over us, we tend to cling to the familiar. And the familiar in Britain is the class system and deference and forelock tugging. So we've kind of gone into that kind of mode, unfortunately. And it's the worst possible kind of thing we can do is to go into that kind of defensive kind of reactionary mode. We should be kind of more expansive in our thinking and in our politics. And I think that the voting, unfortunately, has ossified that kind of system. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of paralyzed us in that way of thinking and that way of acting.
Yeah, and I think nowadays, because obviously, you know, I'm 29 now, so I've been voting since I was 18. You know, I remember there was a Holocaust survivor came in my school when I was younger, and he was like, look, when you get, you know, when you're allowed to vote, make sure you use it, because what happened to my country, etc., was all because people voted for the wrong person or whatever. And I always took that for,
yeah, again, it's like they voted, you know what I mean, they voted. And yeah. You know, the lesson of Nazism, the lesson of Trump is that kind of that you don't really need to have a majority. You know, they're both kind of ascendant with about 30% of the people basically supporting them. You know, you only have to have that kind of that kind of small vanguard of committed kind of rabid followers, and you know, you have the apathy and the split of the rest. So the idea is that, you know, that's the kind of lesser of two evil arguments, and it is a pervasive one. You know what I mean? It is in times of kind of great social kind of upheaval, it is a pervasive one. And understand it, and also understanding, as I'm saying, I do understand the dangers of not voting. I do understand the dangers of not stopping something bad happening, basically. But ultimately, I think we have to be looking ahead. We have to be kind of optimistic. We have to be looking into the future. We have to be voting positively. And that's why, you know, but that dilemma about whether to stop evil or whether to try and do good, and, you know, you can't, sometimes maybe you can't do both at the same time in the voting system. I think that's resolved by a lottery system. I think that, that issue is resolved by a lottery system. That's why I'd like to move to that.
Yeah, no, it makes
sense. That's one thing that I noticed when I was looking at the at each party when it was the, because I remember I was texting you about it, and Andy, I was saying I don't know who to vote for because of this, because of that, and then you sent me a lot of the manifestos, didn't you, Andy? And I was looking at each manifesto, and I was like, right, well, that's great. That's not so great. That's great. That's not so great. That's not so great. And then I was looking at other manifestos, thinking that's good, but that's not good. And I was thinking, well, why can't they all just come together and create a super party? I mean, obviously not being political, I'm far from like clued up when it comes to politics, but why can that not be a thing? Why can we not just create one big super party? Do you know what I mean?
I think that's what Irvine's saying there. Like, you know, if you had that lottery, then, because at the moment we have a system, I guess, where you've got kind of right-wing ideas, left-wing ideas, centrist ideas, and then you've got the far-right, far-left, etc. But like you say, if it was a complete lottery of 600 and something people, then whittled down to 40 so in the cabinet, them 40 so people are all going to be vastly different in their views, in their ideas, but they'll have to work together. Whereas now, if you've got a cabinet of mainly kind of right sort of wing or mainly kind of left wing sort of politicians, they're not speaking for the majority of the country no matter what. You know, the one ideology is never going to speak for everybody, I guess. Where,
well, I also think that we've been kind of sold about predominantly in terms of ideology, because our view, you know, we're still, you see all the shite on in the news media, particularly in print news media, that it's all about free enterprise versus socialism, and kind of, I mean, capitalism and socialism have never been the way that they're portrayed as being for years. They're both kind of technologies, kind of, you know. And one thing, they're not opposing forces. They're both kind of the bastard children of industrialization, basically, you know. And we've kind of, when we've had a good combination of capitalism and socialism, like the post-war social democratic years, that's when you've had really boom societies, kind of high wage, high tax societies, and you've been able to build an infrastructure, and then you've had greater wealth created on top of that. But we're still held into this idea that there's this kind of there's this battle between between the idea of a, you know, the idea that to me it's like kind of like free enterprise and socialism only work on a small scale community basis. Like, you know, when they both start to become owned by the state, then neither of these two things. You know, it's like when socialism becomes top down and becomes like a bunch of people in drawing rooms deciding this is what's best for the working class and all this kind of stuff. It's not rooted in the community and that people live in. Then it's you know, to me, it's not socialism. It's just a state imposition. Similarly, capitalism, it's like with mergers and acquisitions and the tendency towards kind of one enterprise dominating one industry, monopoly, oligopoly and all that, it doesn't exist in a free market form unless it's at very small scale locally, again, you know. And it doesn't matter whether it's led by the state as in China, or whether it's led by the corporations as in America. It's still kind of state capitalism, and it's still, you know, the countries still share these kind of same sort of objectives and these same kind of behaviours, and it's all about a negation of democracy, whether it's a two-party system or one-party system. It's all about not giving people these kind of options, and kind of, you know, I think that the lottery system, again, you know, going back to and going back to smaller scale government of kind of city states and that are kind of, you know, that are working and trading with each other and all that. I think that's the kind of that's the kind of anarchist model that I would aspire towards. Like, you know, that's kind of that's me kind of being a kind of unrepentant old anarchist and just laying all that on the table, you know. But that's the way I would kind of like to see these things develop.
Yeah, because like you say, I mean, you know, I think the system at the moment is one thing that, like, I was going to touch on earlier is I remember sort of voting at 18 and like none of my friends really cared, none of them really wanted, like, voted or anything. And nowadays, a lot more people, I mean, I think we, you know, the last election or the one before had like the biggest turnout in records. I worry though, I mean, that's great in my opinion. It's great that people are taking, you know, taking it into consideration and voting. But then I think to me, it's kind of become almost like a football team or it's kind of become tribe, like, you know, people who I know who vote for one certain party, like you say, they won't listen to any of the views from the others. It is almost like they're voting for their football team.
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of, you know, it's a partisan thing. You know, it becomes very partisan. And I think, you know, the kind of, the binary kind of life of social media and all that has kind of made that into, is, you know, has increased that kind of tendency. So, yeah, and again, I think that in order to break that down, you kind of, you know, it's like, just thinking about all this nonsense, all this, the campaigns, the propaganda and all this kind of stuff and the constant sort of, the whole Rupert Murdoch thing about the Sun made this, made this a kingmaker and all this sort of stuff. All that goes out the window as soon as you just have, because if you have a lottery that's so arbitrary, you know, and it's like kind of, so you don't know who you're going to have there, you know, you kind of, you know, the chances are that you're going to, you might get a lot of people with kind of, the biggest issue you would have in doing that is to make sure that it's fair and not corrupted, you know, so that you kind of, you know, and the, you know, the whole mechanism for that, that'd be a massive job in itself to do that, like, but assuming you could do that, I think it's like, it's a way forward, because all those, you know, all those vested interests, all those powers, you know, people will stop doing that. They'll stop trying to, because it's not going to have any impact at all. So hopefully the society would, instead of investing into all this nonsense and all this conflict and this kind of stupidity, they would start investing in proper education, and education would start to pay off.
Yeah, that's it, because I guess you'd have to, like you said earlier, you'd have to have everyone sort of educated to a high degree, really, for that to work.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like, it's not going to be as difficult to do that as people think, because you think of the fucking idiots that are there now. You know, it's like the, you know, the government's run by a combination of kind of really upper class fools and estate agents, spiv types, you know. I mean, there's not a great deal of education and consciousness amongst these people. I mean, you could literally now, if you look at people like kind of, you know, they all seem like kind of Hancock and Rabb and Johnson and all that. They all seem completely out of their depth when trying to operate in this kind of crisis. You could pick a bunch of people who, you know, who were just like kind of doing their jobs, going about their business, whether they were frontline health workers or people working in a supermarket, or and you put them in a committee and say, how, this is all, this is evidence, what's the best way of working this out? And they've no vested interests in anything, you know. Yeah. It's like one might be a doctor, one might be an accountant, one might be a policeman, school teacher and all that, but they've all got to sit there in that chamber, as, you know, as a cabinet, and then sit there as a bigger kind of debating forum and work out what's going to happen. And all they would do, like anybody sensible would do, they look at best practice around the world. They look at what everybody's doing around the world, and they take all the best practice from that. They wouldn't be in totes a bunch of people who sell masks or who are trying to sell this fucking poxy drug which doesn't work and all that, you know, it's going to kill more people, that, you know, and all this crap would be taken out of the system, you know. So that's the again, that's, to me, that's the way that democracy moves forward. Otherwise, we're just stuck in this rut.
Do you think people are scared to vote, though? Like, not scared of it, but do you think a lot of the people nowadays have been put off by voting because of because of all the things that we was things that said people that they said that would happen with Brexit. You know, there was a lot that's again, I'm not clued up, but wasn't there a promise to put loads of money into the NHS when Brexit got done, and then that never happened or something? There was a lot.
But you know, again, it's like it's you know,
so nowadays might think, well, if I've been promised this and I voted that and I've gone and done that, and then they've completely gone against everything that I've said. So yeah, people nowadays might just think, well, what's the fucking point in voting? Because
that's the thing, you know, see, it's like kind of I mean, anybody that I know who's voted for something on kind of, you know, sort of high principles, you know, if they voted for it on money and they've got money and they've voted Conservative, they, you know, sometimes they'll be satisfied. But most people have kind of been disenchanted by whatever they voted for, because even if it's got in, even if it's been a platform, it's kind of been eroded, or it's been compromised, or it's been undermined, or they've been lied to. And again, that whole nature of campaigning, where you promise people things and you can't actually deliver them because of circumstances, you know, or because you're just in tow to bigger vested interests, all that would be taken away with a lottery, because you've taken out the whole idea of campaign.
Yeah.
You know, the idea of having to campaign would be removed from the whole equation.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, because I guess because they wouldn't know who, if they were going to even have a chance of winning, so they wouldn't able to be to campaign.
Well, you don't even, you know, the nature of it, if it's just a draw, you know, you don't know your name's going to come up, so you don't make promises, you don't campaign, because it's like you can campaign to all that, you know, and your name might never be picked, you know. So most people's name would never be picked in a lifetime to do anything, but you can extend that not just to Parliament, but you can extend that to local government, so that you have a city state whereby people are picking the local representatives, they're picking the local council, they're picking the local mayor, a kind of, you know, a local level for a lottery. And they did do that in government units, kind of back in Italy and the Italian Renaissance and all that, you know. So you have you have a precedent for that to operate, but we're now living in a kind of in a much more educated, much more democratic society, where people are used to, albeit in a kind of roundabout compromise way, of making some kind of participation, or some sort of participation in it. So yeah, I mean, it's it was like, I got interested in it. I forget the guy's name. It was this Dutch kind of political scientist guy who's kind of looked at all the potential models of lottery kind of allocation of governmental posts instead of the, you know, the voting for it, and the arbitrary system, you know, where nobody knows who's going to be in charge, is much better, you know, is kind of, so, and people are just much kind of more capable than they think. You know, we're kind of hypnotized into all this elite nonsense, you know, but then you see the reality of it when you look at those fucking dumbass fucking bastards on TV trying to kind of string two sentences together, trying to work out what it is, you know, that's going on, and you see that's the reality of it, and you think, is this the best we can do?
Yeah.
No way. Yeah.
It is strange, isn't it? Because I guess now, like you say, for me, it seems that, you know, I do vote and I do like to believe in the system. I think your idea, that's blown my mind. I think, you know, it could be something that could really revolutionise. But I think voting nowadays, like, I'm a little bit getting there, like, does it matter? Because the ones who win, like you say, are the ones with the most money. You look at America and you've got, you know,
I mean, it's like you're gonna have two really old senile white guys up against each other, you know, one's mentally old, the other one's got onsets of dementia, you know. Is that the best? What kind of a system produces that, you know? It's like, you know, it's fucked up, you know. It's like kind of you've had a lot of old people kind of who are barely out, you know, most of them are who are in kind of continence pads, who voted for Johnson, like kind of 0.001% of the population who kind of appointed him as a Conservative leader in the first place, as Prime Minister in the first place. There's got to be better ways of doing things. You know, you've got to get better people engaged. And I think, you know, I think there are better people out there. They're just not political. They're just not. They've just not been kind of. They've not had that presumption of arrogance in the system that they've kind of been educated in, that they could take these roles on when obviously they can. You know. So I think that's the major kind of perceptual block. And if people were kind of forced into that kind of role, if they were thinking, "Fuck me, my name's coming in the lottery. I've got to be an MP. I better start boning up on things and get talking to people and getting used to it." There's all these resources now, you know. There's all these resources online on the internet and all. We can educate ourselves to an incredibly high level. What we don't have is the motivation to do so because we don't really have the reason to do it just now. If we had something that were that kind of idea of some kind of service to the nation that is thrust upon us basically through a lottery, then, you know, we'd have to step up to that. And I think most people would step up to it.
Yeah, I guess they would. Like I say, when you first said the idea, I was kind of like, oh, I don't know. But like you say, if we lived in that world where everyone was educated to a certain degree and stuff, because, you know, there are, you know, unfortunately people, because of the education system, you know, who you'd maybe look at and go, I don't want you running the country. And that's you know, being a bit... maybe.
But most of them actually do run the country. That's the problem, like, you know. So, so it's kind of... It's not any kind of more of a barrier to, you know, it's like kind of... I mean, if you have 40 people, for example, and you pick one to be the prime minister, and they, you know, and the person's a fucking nutter, then you move to the rest of the people. You have a system whereby you have cabinet government and they restrain kind of the activities of that person, basically, you know, through the work in their departments. But I don't think you can. You know, I think most people, if they're a little bit out of their depth, they don't jump into the fucking arrogant mode like kind of Trump and Johnson. And say, I know best in this village. We don't need to shake hands with everybody. This fucking nonsense, like, you know, they have enough kind of humility and enough intelligence to take a step back and think, well, I've got to fucking learn about this. You know, I've got to actually kind of to educate myself. And if I can't, I've got to ask for help from the people around me, from the people that are going to be supporting me and assisting me in this. And I've got to kind of to realize that in certain areas, they'll know better than me, and I've got to take that kind of advice from them. And then you kind of, you have a whole different relationship. You stop fucking putting fucking dumbass fucking so-called businessmen who are mostly fucking idiots who can't knock a fucking two bits of wood together but have inherited tons of shit from their parents and their grandparents and all that before them, and they have this massive sense of entitlement. You get them out of the picture and you get people who are hardworking people who can apply themselves, and you get also people who've studied and learned hard, and they know about science, and you bring them in, and you bring these experts in, and you listen to what they've got to say, and you take their advice. And most people who don't have egos and who've not been encouraged to be these kind of so-called, like these kind of 19th, 18th, fucking 17th century type leaders, will vibe on that, they'll pick up on that. And also you're going to have 50% women straight away. You know, it's like kind of the way it's going to come out. And that's going to change the whole dimension. You're going to have a whole new generation of women who are not going to pretend to be men. They're not going to emulate the very worst aspects of male behavior, of male group behavior. They're going to kind of they're going to have their own sort of way of dealing with things. I mean, it's like it's, you know, if you look at Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand, has been by far the most effective.
Yeah.
Prime Minister, one of the most effective people at dealing with the COVID virus, because there's no ego there. There's just a straight down the line, pragmatic kind of, what's the best way we can do this?
How can we care about it? Well, it makes a huge difference, doesn't it? People who actually care about what's going on, you know, because like you said, I think there's just a lot of arrogance.
Well, it's also about enrichment. I mean, it's like you've got a class of people who just followed the money for the last 30 years. You know, the 1% have taken everything, basically. And you have a class of people that have gone into politics for the sole purpose of enriching themselves and enriching other people, enriching their peers who are already loaded anyway. If you have a lottery system, you have people coming into it with all different motivations. And some might just think, well, I can make a few bob out of this. but they'll be in a bigger system whereby, you know, they're working with the populace as a whole, they're working with representatives of the population as a whole, and their behaviour will modify as a result of that. They won't be able to push their predominant views in over other people, because there's a whole notion they actually have to do something, they actually have to run the country.
Yeah.
You know, this is what's fucked up the government now, because for the last 30 years, people have been treating the country like it's basically the assets of the country are basically theirs to rip off and theirs to take away, and that's how it's been treated for the last 30 years by powerful elites. And now the crisis for the Conservative Party, the reason that the Jacob Rees-Mogg and Priti Patel and all these people have vanished is because they're basically trying to make money out of this disaster. They're sitting on their laptops and moving currency around all over the place. And they think it's a terrible imposition for them to have to actually govern. You know, this is why they're so shit at it. We didn't sign up for things that make us actually govern. That's why they were so shit at the Brexit negotiations, David Davis and all that. It was like kind of, you know, we want to farm everything out. We want to push it all out to the private sector, push it out to tender. And suddenly they have something, they've given themselves a job. You know, you've got to negotiate Brexit. How can you not negotiate a single fucking trade deal in 3 years? You know what I mean? You've got 3 years to do it. You can't negotiate one fucking proxy trade deal. You know, it's like, even back in the 70s, 80s, politicians were just as self-serving as they are now, and they were just as about lining their own pockets, but they had an overriding interest that they were public servants, they were first and foremost there to serve the people. There's none of that now. I mean, I was reading the Trump book, The Fire and the Fury, and everybody in that, it was all about enriching themselves and enriching their friends around them, and people could do stuff for them. That's why they were in politics. The only references they had to the population as a whole was occasionally looking at polls. And now I went to see the LBJ film, and Woody Harrelson is LBJ, and it's like the politicians there and the officials there, they were just as self-serving. They just wanted to ride their own, you know, kind of feather their own nests. But there was an overriding thing, is that we have to look after the people that have elected us. We have to look after the country as a whole, the citizens as a whole. They're our responsibility. We have to do the best for them. And that massive gap that's been created between these two eras, you see it in things like COVID. You know, it's like they've not got their eye on the ball. They've not got their eye on the people that are representing, that they're supposed to be representing. They've got their eye on their own interests. They've got their eye on the interests of their friends, financial, business interests. They're not looking at the interests of people, not looking at the interests of safety. So that would change. That would change in a lottery system, because the representatives would have to look out for the interests of the people as a whole. That would be what they would be mandated to do.
Yeah. So what do you think would need to be implemented then, other than education, to kind of get, do you think the COVID situation that we're in now could maybe push this on? Because like you say, right now we're in a situation where I believe the world now has to change. Like you said then, pre-war, you know, and pre-industrialization, the world changed. Is this another sort
of... Well, I think we can't hide behind kind of sort of old kind of class kind of narratives and sort of patriarchy narratives and all that. We've got to grow up and think that everybody's got to step up and take responsibility for the way we are. We can't be like fucking little children hiding behind the coattails of some Etonians and the class structure and all that, and being patted on the head by them and patronised. And we actually do have to step up and say, look, everybody's responsible for the governance of this country. You know, it's like, and that's the kind of primary attitude we have to take, and we have to kind of, and I think the education is important. We have to educate people into thinking, this is your responsibility, this is what we have to do, this is how we have to operate. And even if you're not kind of picked or appointed to be a governing kind of member of a governing body or in any way at all, you are responsible for monitoring them and keeping them in check and calling them to account as an engaged citizen. So I think that's the kind of revolution we have to have. You know, we have to have that kind of,
and do you know, think, possibly getting there a little, sorry, to, do you think that's possibly getting there a little bit more now where, for instance, in the...
I hope so. I mean, I think that, you know, that if it doesn't get there, there's going to be more crises like this, more severe ones to follow. I think this is just, this is, all these things are kind of like the financial crash in 2008, this now. I think, you know, that these are all things that we're getting warnings that the life we had and the system that we had is in major change, and it can't be sustained any longer, and that we have to change and adapt with it, you know. So these are the ways I like to see us change and adapt. You know, it's like kind of, we can't be frightened of freedom. We have to embrace freedom, because the alternative is that we live in some kind of dictatorship or some kind of autocracy. And I think, you know, as things stand now, I think the majority, a lot of people, probably the majority, would prefer to live like that, because it's what people are used to. People are used to being told what to do, you know. When there's a crisis on, most people won't react. They'll just say, like, fucking, somebody tell me what to do and I'll do it and all that. We like to be led. We like to be kind of commanded. But we can't get away with that anymore. I think we have to evolve. We have to grow up. We have to kind of have some kind of intellectual kind of existential renaissance of humanity. Otherwise, we're fucked, basically. We can't really go on. There's just going to be another COVID, more severe after this one, then another financial crash. Then it's just going to go on and on and on until we're kind of basically kind of cannibalizing each other.
Well, I think this is, like you say, I think this could be a good learning curve for that, because, you know, I remember sort of being 18, 19, maybe a little bit older, working at places like, you know, the local Asda and things like that, and kind of just thinking, I don't care about this job. This is just a shit job to get me through. Who gives a shit that I'm doing this, whatever. But now them people are the people who are propping up the country. And I think that's one thing that's kind of come from, like you say there, from that kind of class structure that's handed down from, you know, colonial days, is that the working class don't matter, and them kind of jobs, you know, working in shops, or, you know, even cleaning.
Well, again, it's the working classes that have saved the day, you know, and they're kind of, it's horrendous, kind of, Johnston kind of being touted by the mainstream media as a Churchill, where he's kind of, he's like a kind of cross between Chamberlain and Lord Haig, you know, he's sending people to the fucking death. The new psalm is the kind of front line. I mean, it's just disgusting, the health workers haven't got the very basic stuff, you know, and all these horrible war analogies, but it's like sending somebody into the front line without guns or without fucking kind of protective kind of, or, you know, like helmets and stuff like that. You can't kind of do that, you know, and you realise now that when it comes to the crunch, it's not these fucking vainglorious billionaires that are being profiled in Forbes magazine that are saving the country, that are saving the day. They're doing fuck all, absolutely fuck all, and totally useless, completely fucking superfluous.
A lot of them are asking for money.
Yep, and all they're doing is begging. They're begging for some, you know, the modern state capitalism, whereby you kind of you kind of push all the risk out there. You socialize all the risk and you privatize all the gain. You know, that's all they're asking for. You know, being fucking nationalize all these bastards, basically. But and you know, it's like, but yeah, I mean, we are at this kind of precipice now, and we do have to decide what we're going to do.
Yeah. Hopefully, like, you know, I've been pretty confident throughout this that, you know, as much as this is, and it is a terrible, terrible, you know, thing to happen, and you know, unfortunately, a lot of people have, you know, lost lives. The positives from it, I guess, are it could hopefully change the way we view the world, especially like you said before, you know, the amount.
Well, it will change. I mean, it will. You know, it's like it will change, or it just keeps happening. We either learn the lesson sooner, or we learn it later. You know, there is no going back. Basically, I think everybody knows that to some extent. You know. And it's basically, the problem is older cunts like myself are just too, you know, we've grown up in a kind of more affluent society where there's been progression, you know, there's been kind of sort of jobs and sort of, there's been sort of money floating around, and you can duck and dive a bit and do all right, you know, that's all fucking going now, that's all crumbling away now, but we kind of people of my generation just seem to want to hold on and just hopefully let somebody else deal with it when it's all done. I don't think we can afford to do that now because the time frame of all this is so much more advanced. You know what I mean? It's moving on so much more quickly.
As like you say, you know, this is, I think, where a lot of the polarization when it comes to voting comes from, because, you know, the people of sort of your generation, like you say, you've seen that growth in the country, you've seen that progression where, you know, I turned 30 this year and my whole entire adult life, we've been in a recession. So,
yeah,
you know, that's so polar opposite.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, I mean, it's like kind of, it's that kind of thing that, that's why I was saying about the lottery thing. I wouldn't have anybody over 60. I probably wouldn't have anybody over 50 taking part because, I mean, I think it's obscene that somebody that's 14 can't vote and somebody that's 90 can just pull themselves down to the polling booth to vote, basically, you know?
Society's changed so much. Society has changed so much. And it's like, I guess the youth of today, you know, they have, particularly with kids nowadays, are very clued up and they're very streetwise, some of them. And I guess their views are kind of just completely ignored when they know what it's like in the schooling systems and things like that.
Well, you know, it's amazing that when Cameron won the election, you know, we're still in that cycle. We're still in that kind of electoral cycle, that 5 years, basically. You know, and since then we've had kind of like the Scottish independence referendum, we've had kind of Brexit referendum, we've had kind of Theresa May, we've had kind of Johnson and COVID and all that. You know, it feels like about 30 years worth of shit has been compressed into those 5 years, and it's only going to get more and more. This is going to happen. This is the velocity of this is going to increase, I think. You know, there is going to be no period of stability. This is the new stability. In a sense, the next 5 years will be even more torrid than this, I think. So we really have to learn quickly. You know, and we've not been learning quickly. We've been jumping into this, you know, it's like, let's have a 30s style Victorian kind of laissez-faire society, or let's have a kind of, a 19th century Victorian kind of society, or let's have a 1930s kind of sort of crypto-fascist type of society, or let's move back to kind of Keynesian socialism of the 70s and all. None of these models can apply. We have to really sort of be very radical and very bold in our thinking.
Yeah, because the world, like you say, the world's changed. It's not like it was back. I mean, you know, humanity, I guess, never really changes in terms of that, but like you say, nowadays, you know, technology,
that's the main thing as well, is technology has changed the world a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you can't uninvent this stuff, you know what I mean? You can't uninvent it, and it's like, you know, if you look at what's happening with technology, we're moving to a world without profit, without wages, you know. And what's, well, you know, how, if you're, you know, it's like, how do if you're kind of an upper class, ruling class person, the kind of boardroom type of, you know, elite kind of landed gentry, and all, how do you maintain that position of power when you can't pay people wages? You know, you can only do it through propaganda and through kind of brainwashing and kind of, you know, mass kind of fucking hypnosis and all that, you know. And you can only sustain that to an extent when, you know, when there's no more food. Kind of that's when it gets, when the supply chains to the supermarkets break down, that's when it gets problematic. But so we have to get into a position whereby we're thinking about how do we keep all this, you know, how do we kind of, I never thought I'd be saying this as a kind of long-term anarchist, but how do we kind of preserve what's left and what's good about capitalism and socialism before we can kind of build new structures, or we can, or move on to a new type of world, you know? We have to do this very, very quickly, you know? And to some extent, if we don't, it's going to be imposed on us in a bad way, because the sheer desperation to survive when everything goes really tits up. And we've got a bit of, you know, you can see in the supermarket queues, you can see a kind of stroppiness and edginess and all that. You know, imagine if there's no food there, or there's very little food there. How crazy it could become. You know, and if not through COVID, then through something else, this is going to eventually kind of happen. And there's going to be something on top of that. And it's, And you don't want to be all negative and all that, because I'm kind of positive about it. And I think people are resourceful and resilient, and they do stand together, and they do have intelligence, and we are kind of a problem-solving species, you know. So I think we will get there, but I think that to get there with the least collateral damage as possible has got to be the kind of has got to be the sort of objective. And we have to get it together. We have to invest in new forms of democracy and decision making to help us get down that path.
Yeah,
I think Irving for Prime Minister is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If there's one way, one possible way things could be even more fucked than they are now, that would be it.
So I mean, because like you say there, you know you're a long time sort of anarchist and stuff. You know, obviously, you're Scottish. Did you vote in the independence vote, or was that?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, but I mean, I didn't. Sorry, I didn't. I couldn't because I was in America. But I would have voted yes to independence. I had been over here, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because that's something again that, like, I remember when that vote sort of was taking place, and I was like, you know, just not wanting Scotland to go in a kind of like, oh no, like you can't, like, you know, but like looking back at it now, I'm like, what, you know, wow, that was a case where I guess Scotland was so shafted, because the main reason that Scotland kind of stayed, I guess, was to be part of the European Union, wasn't it? That was a big
concern. it was you know, and then that was taken right off the table, you know. It was the big selling point for the no campaign that would be part of Europe, and then bang, we're out of Europe, basically. You know, we're taken out of Europe by nationalism, but it's not Scottish nationalism. Yeah. So I kind of, you know, again, you know, I grew up in these more affluent times, and kind of where Britain meant something very cohesive. It was about the health service, the nationalised industries. It was about that kind of sense that we were kind of all in this together. And then in the Thatcherite era, you had kind of the breakup of all that. You know, you had kind of particularly the overheat and the property prices in the southeast. You had very different economies emerging in the rest of Britain, you know. So I think that to break up that kind of imperialist mindset, imperialist mentality, you know, I was all for kind of Scottish independence. And I want, you know, and somebody who's going to be a long time kind of resident in England, I wanted that for England as much as I did for Scotland, because I thought that, and I still think, you know, the reason that the Tories fear it particularly is not for what it kind of would do to Scotland, but for what it would do to England. I think if an independent Scottish state became separate and it didn't have any kind of ruling classes, House of Lords, monarchy, kind of all these people that are factored in and have their snouts in the trough but don't actually contribute anything, people in England would start saying, maybe we should have some of that as well, you know. And I think that was a big fear, and that was a need there to keep it together. And, you know, I would hope that at one point an independent Scotland, kind of independent England, independent Ireland, and, you know, Wales and all that could come back into a kind of whole kind of British setup, and you'd have a kind of cohesive kind of Britishness again, but based on a kind of non-imperialist sort of a whole new set of politics now. Yeah? So yeah, because, you know, I want instinctively I want people to be together, not apart, but yeah. I want them to be together in kind of nation states that are serving the citizen, you know, not serving elites or serving the kind of imperial kind of elites and all that. It doesn't make any sense to do that.
Yes, I mean, I'm exactly the same, you know, like I remember when that vote was happening, and like you say, the whole the propaganda kind of that the Tories were putting out and stuff, and I kind of bought it. I was like, no, like, you know, we're Great Britain and stuff like that, and I'm not a patriotic kind of guy, you know. I believe that the world is just the world, and we shouldn't live in these little defined sort of little countries, etc. But yeah, at the same time, you know, we could.
Well, you know, the thing is that nobody's replaced the nation state as a form of government yet, you know. So you have a good nation state. I mean, one that's based on citizens' rights rather than the entitlements of kind of old kind of imperial elites, you know. And that's to me is a sensible form of government. I don't care if it's kind of if it's Scotland or Britain or Europe or whatever, you know, where they draw borders doesn't really interest me at all. I'm more interested in the kind of government you get. I do think that kind of small localized government is better. I think that kind of small countries are better. You look at places like New Zealand, and you know, I think it's like, why do we have to be part of a big imperial country? I mean, what good does it do? You know. So that would be my kind of my kind of preference.
Amazing. I think that's, you know, that's
brilliant. Well, you've indulged me incredibly, guys. Listen to me just fucking rush.
No, it's
brilliant, because nobody listens to me anyway. Like, nobody in the fucking house listens to me, you know, nobody in kind of nobody in the neighborhood listens to me, you know. It's like, so
it's interesting for me, because I've never really, I know Andy, and if anyone who's listening now has got Andy Ellis on Facebook, they know that he's well into his politics anyway. Fucking hell. But I've never really been into it, because I never understood it. And I think it was the whole Brexit thing where we was promised a whole lot that wasn't delivered. So that just lost my confidence in all that. And I just felt like, I just didn't believe any of it. So I've just kind of like, I just sort of, it's never interested me. But listening to you two go there, this is definitely the quietest episode ever from me anyway. I've just sort of...
Do you good once in a while, mate, like,
yeah. No, it's been good to listen to you two put the world to rights. It's been interesting.
I mean, Tomo, like you were just saying then, obviously, like, I am very kind of political on Facebook. But for me, again, it's like, I don't ever consider myself to be, you know, like I said then, I'm not very patriotic. To me, it doesn't matter where you're from or anything like that. And the same with your sort of political ideology as well. For me, it's like, I'm attracted to the ideas rather than the party.
Yeah.
You know, if there's someone there sort of saying things that, because, you know, I'm very much, you know, I'm into that kind of sort of socialism over kind of capitalism and stuff. But at the same time, I enjoy certain aspects of capitalism, I guess. I like going to Disney World with the family, and I enjoy, you know, Nike trainers and these kind of big capitalist companies. But at the same time, you know, I just want to live in a country or a world where, you know, healthcare, a home is provided for everyone. You know, healthcare is free, a home's provided for everyone. And we start seeing them as like necessities rather than something that you only get if you can afford it, I guess.
I'll endorse that, and that's a good point to end on, guys. Thanks for your time.
Nice one. Thank you very much, mate. Thank
you very much, Ruben. That's amazing. Thank you.
Cheers, guys. Big love.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too.
Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
It feels nice to be able to talk. I think that's the most I've ever listened in my entire life.
It was, yeah, because like you say, sometimes we say, don't we, and sometimes like we have a guest on and it's the three of us or the four of us sometimes just chatting. And then sometimes, yeah, like Johnny Harris is in episode 3,
yeah,
you know, it's the guest leads it and it's nice, you know? And Irvine led it.
Go on, sorry, mate.
And I was just saying, and Irvine led it, and it was nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. And he's got such an interesting, like, the whole lottery system thing that he was mentioning, like.
Yeah,
It's bizarre, isn't it? Like, you just never think about anything like that. And, yeah, I think it'd be a great system, really. But, I mean, obviously there'd be flaws to it and things like that. Do you know what I mean? I think... Realistically, it would. I don't think it would work. I mean, it's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, when he first said it in the podcast, I was kind of like, what? A lottery system? Then you could have, like, just anyone do it. But then what how he backed it up with sort of saying, educate everyone to a level where anyone could potentially run the country and then do it. And you're kind of like, yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, could that work?
But then you're going to be educating a lot of people for one person to be picked.
Yeah, but then everyone's educated, which is better, right? If everyone's educated,
yeah,
to, of course, to that level.
Yeah, yeah. And then maybe you're spending a lot of time to getting educated on something that's not going to make any difference to your life. And then the favourite worries would be even fucking worse.
The what?
Because you would be right a lot of the time, wouldn't they?
Who would?
You know, you get all these... Yeah, all these Facebook politicians.
Oh, right. Like me.
Like you, yeah, like you. No, but yeah, it sort of would be a bit like, it would be wasted time, wouldn't it, really? Because if you're learning about someone, it's like going to college to learn how to be a joiner when you're going to be
I do think we do, I mean, again, obviously we touched on it a little bit last week, and obviously it's still an ongoing thing, but I think we do need to have a bit of an upheaval on our education system in this country, especially just because of some of the stuff that's happened over the last couple of weeks, you know, the whole argument about statues and stuff like that. And people saying that they're a tool for education. And it's like, but are they? Because I wouldn't have known who that statue was or what that man,
no,
unless I went and read it. So then, you know, should we be teaching everything about sort of British history, good and bad, because there's a lot of good, there's a lot more bad.
A lot of bad.
Should we be teaching all that in schools? I think absolutely. Because then, like you say, then you're giving a well-rounded view. You know, you can say, look, this guy was a bad guy. He also did this. Or you can say, this guy was a good guy. He also did this. And then everyone's got a well-rounded view. Rather than kind of just heralding
the
him
education
as a hero.
System's a bit weird anyway.
Exactly. Yeah, the education system, I don't think
there's any worse time to learn about life skills and about history and things like that than when we're a kid. Because like, you don't listen, really, do you? You don't really take it in.
No, I mean, maybe you should. Yeah, you do. Maybe everything you adults. Know. Yeah.
Because I think I'd take more in as an adult than I would as a kid. I certainly would anyway, because I was a little shit.
Well, same. I mean, I was a little shit in school, and I think most of my kind of learning started sort of after school, you know, picking up books and just learning stuff for myself, watching documentaries and things like that. Because
it'd be
like
to see the world flipped on its ass. Like, you do all your work in life when you're a kid, and you've got more energy anyway. You don't really need sleep that much when you're a kid, and then you do all your education when you're older. Because you take it in more. Like, you listen. I know if I...
You sound like a Victorian, like, frigging... I don't know. You like the Victorian work?
Well, I'm just saying. I'm just saying it's an interesting experience.
You'd have kids down the mines, you, wouldn't you?
Yeah, mate. Yeah, I would. Yeah. I wouldn't have minded it when I was a kid, to be honest. No, I did a job, actually. I shot a film called Stratum Deep. And we went and shot down the coal mines in Barnsley. Oh,
yeah,
it was horrendous. So small and claustrophobic, and yeah, God, it gives you a real insight into what it was like working down there. So no, I wouldn't want to do that as a kid. No. I wouldn't send children. No.
But
it was another great episode. I really enjoyed it, and fan of Irvine's work as well. So it's kind of nice to be money. I've never met him. He came down to set on Creation Stories quite, but never on the set I was in.
He did that purposely, I think.
I think so. You could hear that. but no, it was great to get an insight into his views, really. Mm-hmm. Discuss his subject. I really enjoyed it. It was good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Like I say, having an interest in it, and I guess people who've listened to it, whether you've got an interest in it or not, hope you've gained something from it. When Irvine first said voting being overrated, I was a bit like, no, like you need to tell people to vote. But then I kind of got a lot of his points. So fair play. That's what this podcast is about. Yeah, it's a kind of come on and have a moan podcast, but also it's like, you've got something, do you know what I mean? I love it like that when he's got a point and his point's actually like pretty decent. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's good when it's something that, like you said, when you don't understand it at first, and then the whole way the point of him explaining is it's your, and then by the end of it, like you said, you think it'd be a good system. So, yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Politics has never been which probably people will notice during the podcast, I'm just sat there like that for an hour. So,
which yeah, I'd be the same if you were talking about, the Brazilian World Cup squad from 2001 or something random like that. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah. Fair play. Golf. Got to introduce next week's guest.
Yeah, next week, I'm buzzing about it, actually. I only met him for the first time last year. End of the summer last year. He's an actor called Oliver Cooper Smith.
Mm-hmm.
I think most famously remembered for Atlantic, I think it was. Tin Star.
Tin Star, yeah. Tin Star on Sky 1. Yeah. I've seen bits of it, yeah. Weirdly got
he's sent. Great in that.
Yeah. What I remember seeing of him, because he plays Tim Roth's son, doesn't he?
But if people haven't seen it, you've just ruined the whole series.
Oh, have I?
Basically. Yeah, you've just completely ruined it. But that's fine.
Well, if they've not seen it by now.
It's a great series, and he's such a good actor. As well, I was working with him on another Sky job called Intergalactic, which took up 8 months of our year last year and the beginning of this year. Instantly got on with Ollie, and we become best mates, and we spent a lot of time together. We had a lot of the same a lot of the same interests. We both love playing FIFA. We both love going to the gym. So I think he quickly became one of my closest friends, and he still is now. So.
It's nice when you meet someone on a job like that, isn't it? When you can just click.
Yeah.
I mean, never had it.
Yeah, really. That's it. Because when you do a job, I just said do. When you do a job, need to grow up. When you do. When you do a job, you may say to people, "Oh, we'll stay in touch." And you do mean it. You do mean it at the time, but then sort of life gets in the way.
You go back to your bubble. Yeah, me and Ollie, home.
You do, yeah.
Go on, you know.
So it was nice to stay in touch with Ollie. It's great to have him on. So, next week, Oliver Cooper Smith.
Nice. And that's it for episode 11. As always, guys, patreon.com/overateverything. Please give a little if you can. Times are obviously hard. We know that. But if you can, please do. Share it as well. I think we said that last week. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, tell someone about it. If you're on the phone to your mate, if you're on a Zoom call, doing a quiz on a weekend, just say, oh, have a listen to that. There's a great episode with someone. Find someone that you like. There is a lot.
What I have noticed as well is people are watching on YouTube and they're saying you need to get people like Stephen Graham on and people like that. We have done that. That was on Series 1, which aren't on YouTube, but they're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, is it called? iTunes?
Apple Podcasts. Yeah, Apple Podcasts, Apple Spotify, Podcasts. Google. I don't know what the Google one is. I don't have Google. But yeah. Tomo, see you next week, mate, for episode 12.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it, mate.
Have a good week, guys. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.